3, 2, 1.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
Hey guys, welcome back for another episode of Let's Dig In. And I am joined by our co-host, Rachel Barnett, the sous chef with Rosendell Events in Atlanta, and then also Chef Christopher Ryloff, who is our director of digital brands. And this week we had the opportunity to talk with a good friend and very talented chef who had an idea that he ran past me right before he left the Greenbriars Apprenticeship Program. And it was the idea to do a food truck. Well, this idea really kind of just manifested into all kinds of exciting success. And he's had an amazing, amazing ride. The chef we're talking about is Chef Tommy D. Ambrosio. And he wanted to launch a food truck. And we had talked about it before he left the hotel and what that might look like, what the concept was. But he really has done an amazing, amazing job. I mean, he's taken this idea, which he wasn't even sure that he was even going to do, but he decided to dive in and take the risk and launch the truck. Well, here we are just a few years later, and that single truck has turned into 8 food trucks. He's got multiple culinary brands as far as restaurants, his Modern Tortilla he just opened up. He has a pizza concept now, a brick and mortar. He has a commissary kitchen. He also is now partnered with a national brand, Kroger, that he shared with us. And also, he was on Chopped. He won the episode of Chopped that he was on with the Food Network. So really, really humble and exciting person to talk with. You'll see his enthusiasm is very contagious over the call. Just an all-around real nice guy, the kind of person you want to be around. And we talked to him about what it was like launching, what it's been like in 2020, how that has impacted his businesses and what he's doing to kind of recalibrate, to kind of get through this. But really enjoyed this episode. I mean, I will say that we've had some great guests on the show, but Tommy will definitely go down as being one of our favorites so far. I mean, he just, his story and his genuine excitement for like what he does is, it's so, you can feel it, like it's contagious. And I really like being around people like this. So let's go ahead and dive into the show. Without further ado, let's dig in, Chef Tommy D. Ambrosio. This episode is brought to you by the ISVA. The International Sous Vide Association provides networking opportunities, educational experiences, and a great organization if you love sous vide, both for the professional and the enthusiast. This week we have Comey, which is the ultimate recipe and menu management software. You can find more information about Comey at www.comey.com. That's K-O-H-M-E-E. And it is the software that we use to manage all of our recipes and our menus. And it's an amazing software. Check it out. And also, Verlosso Salmon has a buttery mouthfeel, firm texture, and mild flavor that complements any method of cooking or preparation. We love it. I cook it at home. I cook it on many of our events. Verlosso Salmon is lower in fat than conventional farm salmon. It offers brighter taste. Coming from the cold and beautiful waters of Chile, they have been a leader in sustainable practices for nearly a decade and are truly a trusted source for delicious quality salmon. Check it out. Tommy D'Ambrosia, former apprentice at the Greenbriar. He had, as I said before, had helped me at the CMC exam. And I was telling them about whenever you left the Greenbriar, I remember the Facebook conversation about you having your idea with the concept and the name. And I just, from afar, have just really admired and just enjoyed watching somebody be successful and saying, hey, here's something I want to do. And man, you've like knocked it out of the park. I mean, you wanted to do your aioli burger concept and start with the trucks. And if you would, I mean, obviously you've been on Chopped as well. So we've loved watching all the success, but can you tell us about a little bit about the company, like how you got started, where you're at today?
Yeah. I mean, I remember the conversation that we had over Facebook, and that was kind of like the extra step to kind of push me to do it. And I remember the question I said, you know, do you think it's a good idea? And the advice that you gave me is the corporate jobs, those types of jobs, they're always going to be around. And it was, you know, now you're young, you know, you don't have much anyway. So why don't you just go take that leap, jump in, see what happens. You know, you've already built that strong foundation, you know, working, you know, for you at the Greenbrier and going to the CIA and all those things. And I really sat and reflected on that and saw that, yeah, that's true. You know, like, let's just see what happens, give it a couple years. And, yeah, so we started about 6.5 years ago. We started off with just one food truck. I moved back to my hometown, Arizona. I was with two of my friends from high school. We were just hanging out. I think it was like, yeah. And it was just like, I think I was back for Thanksgiving break from the Greenbrier. And they said, we should open up a food truck. And I'm like, you guys, like, you're crazy. Like, I'm working for a world-renowned chef. Yeah, my high school buddies. Like, they don't know what I've done, where I've been, right? And they're like, no, I think it's like really something. It's starting to become, you know, and this is like right before the movie Chef came out. And I'm like, you know, I think there could be something there. So we went down, there's a local event called First Friday in Phoenix. And they've got, you know, probably 20 food trucks at the time that would park. And the lines were just around the block. And, you know, we waited in line and we saw kind of what the food was. And there's a couple burger trucks, a couple Mexican trucks. And we went on the burger truck and it was just insane how busy they were. And we tried the burger and I said, you know what? I think we can do this a lot better. Like, let's do it, you know? So, we kind of just scrounged our pennies together. I think we started the whole thing with like $30,000. So not too much money. We had a pretty goofy truck. We were working, you know, in the heat of the Arizona summer, where it's like 120 degrees outside. yeah. It was just brutal. There's no AC on the trucks. I mean, it's, you know, the truck was old. It was run down. I think our first month I was able to do maybe like 3 or 4 events. We saved maybe like $5,000 or $6,000 and the engine blew on the truck. So I'm like, what am I doing?
Oh,
like,
no.
Like, everything we just worked for, it's gone. I got to, you know, reinvest it back.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it was really, that was a crazy kind of wake up call to, you know, I got to be a mechanic too. I got to learn how to change, you know, a spark plug or an air filter,
right, totally.
or you know, whatever it is. So, yeah. So we kind of just started going with the trucks. You know, my two high school friends, they were still working at their jobs, you know, so they could still bring home some money for their family. I wasn't really taking much. I think it was like $1,000 a month or something like that. And luckily my wife was nice enough to let me do this. So, yeah, so we just kind of kept going, reinvesting everything we made back into the truck. And then, you know, there was an opportunity for us to get our second truck, and we were able to pay that off really fast and start kind of getting a team together of, you know, like-minded people. And that was kind of the big thing was, you know, we really got to find people that have a passion for food and for culinary. And yes, we're doing it on a food truck, but let's show somebody, you know, let's wow people with what we can do off of a food truck. And I think we were pretty successful in that. And yeah,
was it hard to find the people?
It was extremely hard. You know, living in Arizona, I grew up here. So I knew what the food scene was here. And it's partly why I left. You know, I knew places, you know, like New York, and going to culinary school in New York, I could learn a lot of things, and I could bring it back, you know, eventually someday. So yeah, it was hard, but the big thing is what I found so far is that if someone has passion and work ethic and just those key factors, right, you can teach them how to cook, especially a burger, the right way. Right. It's just, it's all about attitude. And I think that's a big thing that I focus on with the team is, you know, just having a positive attitude. And if you make a mistake, it's just a learning opportunity, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So. Tom, was there any points that you were like, oh my God, this is, you know, maybe it was whenever the thing broke down, you're like, shit, this is not going to be as easy as I thought. Or, and was there a point when you were like, hey, I think we've got something like really special here. I mean, cause it wasn't like, you know, the trajectory is always going to be like ups and downs and stuff like that. But how long did it kind of take to go through? Like, did you know in the first year?
So the first year, I think it was probably we wrote a little business plan, and we had like a 5-year plan. And our second year, third year was to like have our second truck. We were able to do that within like 6 months. So I knew there was a need for what we were doing, and a want, but the struggle of working on a truck, you know, not really making any money, you know, I still had student loans from culinary school that I was still paying off. And, you know, that was, it was hard, you know, a lot of conversations with my wife and, you know, a lot of sacrifice that had to be put in at that ground level to be able to, you know, to keep it going. And there was, you know, definitely times of doubt. But I knew that I could see the vision, right? Like I could see, you know, would sit back and realize like, I have the foundation, you know, like you said, from a young age, and I can just build on that again. I'm just kind of starting over, you know, I'm building the next level to the house. So, right. You know, and now we've kind of built like somewhat of a mansion, but, it's pretty crazy. Yeah. We've got like, so we have 8 trucks. We've got, 3 different concepts, Modern Tortilla, Aioli Burger, Oakwood Fire Pizza. We have, 1 brick and mortar in kind of like the high school, like right where I grew up. So it's right down the street from the high school. So, yeah, we opened up that one, and then we're opening up another brick and mortar right down the street. We have a 14,000 foot commissary building awesome. That we just purchased. Wow. And we also just signed a deal with Kroger Grocery. So we're inside of their local, Arizona local, which is like Fry's grocery stores. And we actually have an Aioli Burger built inside of a grocery store.
That's amazing. So awesome.
Oh, that's cool. Awesome. So, just to have an idea, when did you start all of this? Like how long ago? And I'm asking you this because for everyone that is listening to us now, for everyone that is listening to the podcast, I want to, put out there that if you really work, like what you just said, that I wrote it down. If you really have passion and work ethic, is something that you can really accomplish. And there's so many people out there just thinking what they can do right now at this point because of the pandemic. And right. even that you have on top of you, the pandemic, you're still moving, you're still pushing, you're still like just getting through the moment.
Yes. And I think a big thing that I took from the Greenbrier, probably the biggest thing, is being able to adapt. You know, you get thrown a curveball, you just got to move around.
Many of them.
The next step. Right. Many of them. Yeah. I mean, it was countless curveballs were thrown. And at first I didn't really understand it. Right. I'm like, why are you making us do this? Like what, you know, you're just making it more difficult than it needs to be. Right. But I, you know, as I sit back and like think about that, it was really like the best lesson of all. And, this has proven that, you know, so much more now that with this pandemic, nobody saw this coming. I mean, we thought that when we started food trucks, we had the recession-proof business. We thought we had, you know, the worst of times-proof business. And because we were mobile, right? We could go to the clients, and that was, like, the big thing. And since then, I mean, food trucks have pretty much wiped out. I mean, in Arizona still, where we can only operate parties of, like, 10, less than 10. So, you know, there's really not much there. We were doing a lot of corporate catering, and most people are working remotely, and you know, so we really had to just change up our business model and look at different things that we can do with the trucks that are still, you know, revenue generating. And so we've kind of jumped into meal prep, been doing a ton of meal prep. You know, we're fortunate that in Arizona, the state's kicked in a lot of funds for people in need, and they kind of did it as a double whammy. So they made sure that that money went to local restaurants, so that we could prepare food for people in need. So, you know, we were fortunate enough to get a couple of those contracts and keep our business going, keep our employees happy. And, you know, we're fortunate we haven't had to let go anybody. Amazing. We're actually building. We're hiring right now. So, you know.
You know, I mean, I feel like, you know, one of the things you said is just about being able to adapt. I mean, I do feel like really not even just in your business, but kind of in life to try to be nimble. And I can say for me, somebody that's always done culinary competitions and very disciplined, people know me very much for being disciplined, but I'm also like a very like open-minded kind of fluid person. I mean, I just kind of have evolved into that. And I feel like, you know, now going into this pandemic, the biggest equity, the biggest thing that you have, if you've worked hard to build strong brands, and as long as you can find different and new models that from a business standpoint still work, you have that brand equity. And that's probably the hardest thing to build. I mean, you got a reputation, a quality product. So I feel like you've done all the hard work. It's just you're doing what everybody else in the country is doing right now and saying, okay, now what is that? What do these new models look like? Like how, because we were just saying before the call that people, the demand for eating has not gone away. People are still eating. Right. It's just they're not doing it in the normal patterns as they were before. Whereas the airlines, people have stopped flying. Like that's a different problem. I think you just got to find, now you got to work harder to find your customer.
Yeah, no, that's so true. I think, you know, we've looked at, you know, so many different things. Like I said, the meal prep, but the other thing is people are still, like you said, eating, and there's third party delivery. And I think there's a lot of people that never would have touched a third party delivery app before. And now with this going on, right, they've downloaded it. They've seen how convenient it is. They're here to stay. So, you know, how do we really tap into that market more so, you know, make it work in our favor, because, you know, they take large percentages, and it's difficult when someone's taking 25-30% right off the top. Like, how do you, you know, it's the restaurant business. There's not much margins. Right. So it's, yeah. So, you know, we've kind of played around with a lot of different ideas. There's, you know, the key is like what we've looked at is labor is really high. The rent is relatively high, you know, but in Arizona, it's not too bad yet. It's really, so we said, well, what if we just opened up 8 concepts and had 2 people running 8 different concepts? You know, nobody knows that it's not a full freestanding restaurant. We just have, now there's 8 chances that they're going to select us, you know, all we need is that, you know, that little edge. So,
this is interesting. And I'm just only cause you just kind of, reminded me of this is that I've found that there's some ghost kitchens that are out there where people are doing, and that's something that we've been working on. We're going to be actually putting that on our online platform, just to give people some background on that. But one of the things that I found interesting is there, and this is actually maybe not really, I don't know how ethical this is, but it is happening, is people have the same pizza out of a ghost kitchen, and they'll have maybe 4 or 5 different brands on one of these apps, and they simply just put the pizza in a different box. And it's almost like they have 4 different chances to sell somebody, you know, the consumer resonates with that particular logo or brand. And again, you know, I don't know how ethical that is, but there's a lot of things that have been happening that even for you, I mean, and for anybody, that it does make the marketplace a little more complicated. There's a lot more layers that didn't really exist. But I do think you got to figure out ways to get to that customer, whatever that looks like, delivery apps, what have you. What advice would you give to somebody that is, if they're thinking about going into food trucks? Because there are a lot of people that they look at the success, and I would definitely say with like the pandemic in mind, and for probably more so, I guess, for maybe next year. I know that this year is still kind of a little bit of a wash, I guess, but you know, if this thing kind of keeps going on, if there's somebody, say, in the D.C. area or in Miami, what advice would you give somebody that's considering a food truck?
One thing kind of like I mentioned before is, you know, take some basic mechanic lessons, you know, whether it's online or something, you know, how to change a tire, how to change a spark plug. You know, I think that's something that's overlooked a lot. And you know, we've had a lot of people come in and say, hey, you know, what do you think I should do first, you know, with the food truck? And there's, you know, especially when you're getting into it, you're not going to be buying a brand new 2020 food truck, right? That just doesn't really exist. And if it does, it's, you know, probably $300,000 or $400,000. So, you know, I think that's a big part, because you will get, you know, if you don't know that industry, like the mechanic industry, you'll get taken advantage of. And, you know, having a mobile mechanic costs so much money. You know, we're fortunate enough now to where we have a full-time mechanic, so can work on the truck.
I would like never, that would, that I would never sucks, even right? think about that. But yeah. I mean, that makes total sense, but who the hell would even, I thought you were going to say something about, you know, the prep, or it's like, mechanic.
Right.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. It makes sense though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's no different than if you have your restaurant and, you know, the refrigerator goes down. I mean, you got to think about how many burgers do you have to sell to fix that refrigerator? Well, the vehicle, that's your kitchen. I mean, it's really,
that's it.
I guess I never really thought about it that way, but that's profound.
And, you know, and the other thing too is, you know, things are going to happen and with the trucks and, you know, if you're on your way to a wedding and it's a 200 person wedding and your truck breaks down, you know, what do you do? Like you have a lot of people relying on you to provide a service and, right. you know, you have someone's incredibly important day that you have the potential to, you know, really derail. So I think, you know, it's also not being afraid to lose money at the beginning is something too, to like get over. We had a truck breakdown. We paid to get a heavy duty tow truck to tow the truck to the wedding. You know, it doesn't look the greatest pulling up, but at least we're able to serve everyone and everyone was able to eat at the wedding. And so it wasn't, you know, the worst thing in the world, but it, you know, so that's really that's another good piece of advice. And a lot of people with food trucks get a bad name and they give a bad name to food trucks because they say they're going to be somewhere and then they don't show up. So
right.
I think, that's a big part of that.
So the whole aioli concept, which I really kind of love, because a lot of people think of, you know, condiments as like traditional fare, like ketchup and mustard. Mm-hmm. Anything interesting, like out of the ordinary? Like, do you try to work some of your culinary into it? Do you try to keep it simple? It's like I use Japanese mayonnaise, or I mean, anything like what's different?
We actually make every aioli fresh. So we don't buy like mayo, you know, from the store. We do it all just pasteurized egg yolks, oil, and, you know, fresh garlic. So everything is a real, so we still hold true to, you know, providing, you know, and having that culinary experience too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something that is gourmet, right? So, yeah, and it's fun, and I love the brand because it's just like mayo aioli is like that vessel that can carry so many different flavors. So, you know, we've got basil garlic aioli, we have a green chili aioli, we've got black pepper aioli, kind of something from the Greenbrier. That was a big thing on that that fried green tomato sandwich.
Oh my God, so
black
good,
pepper
yeah.
aioli and goat cheese, yeah, killer.
Yeah, so, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it's a lot of fun, and that you know, I think the other thing too is when you're creating your menu is to find something that can be used across the board, right? It's all about cross utilization. You're on a food truck; it's a small kitchen, so you have to have things that can be changed and, you know, interchanged fairly easy. So, you know, we make one batch of roasted garlic aioli. We'll split it up into, you know, five or six different sauces, and add our flavor that way.
So what about, go ahead, Rachel.
Oh, I was just going to say that's so cool that you make your own aioli like that. And that's kind of, you know, it's unique to see on a food truck. A friend of mine back in Michigan just opened his first food truck. I'm going to plug the name here, Captain's Wood Fired Pies. Nice. They are growing all
what
their
part
own.
Of Michigan?
They're in Howell, Michigan, which is about 25 minutes from Ann Arbor.
Okay.
But they're growing their own vegetables for their pizzas.
Very cool.
To put on their pies. Great. So
That's awesome. And that is incredible too, on how, I mean, the flavor that you get from a real vegetable that was just grown, you know, just picked is like light years ahead of, you know, what you get from a distributor. So
That's really going to set them apart from, you know, any other pizza food truck that's getting their produce in or whatever. This is grown in their backyard. I just think that's so cool.
Tom, what about as far as like in the state, have you, I mean, I don't know if you, we were just talking before the call. I mean, this is like pretty big deal from the fine dining world of Thomas Keller closing two concepts in New York. And as much as we want to be, you know, there's all these great things and stuff that you're doing. There's everybody's trying to figure out new ways to generate business. But obviously, I mean, there's a lot of scary stuff that's happening. The world is profoundly different than what it was last year. This thing, I think, has kind of continued to manifest and go on. There's things that are, when you think about not having a sports game, about the layers of impact that that has for, restaurants and, I mean, all the businesses that are kind of connected to that. But like, what is the condition and the climate like out there? And then, of course, it's all compounded with a lot of the political climate and the civil unrest. I mean, it's 2020 has been a hell of a year, but
it like, has. Yeah.
What are you seeing out there? Like, what has that been like?
Yeah, I mean, it's been really tough for the fine dining industry. Right now, we're still cut in capacity, so there's only 50% of your capacity you're allowed to have in your restaurant at any given time. You know, whether it's fine dining or fast casual, but they can't make it on those numbers. These fine dining restaurants, just it's impossible at 50% capacity. I mean, if they could have made it on 50% capacity, then they would have made the restaurant with 50% capacity, right? So it's really it's incredibly unfortunate. You know, it's sad for the fine dining world and for culinarians. And I think that you know, there's only so many, only so many types of brands and restaurants will be able to survive this. And you know, I've seen, you know, we've been fortunate being in fast casual and offering something a little bit different than what a typical, you know, fast food restaurant would offer. So people can still kind of get somewhat of their gourmet fix, you know, from coming to us. But I have tons of industry friends that, you know, I grew up with here that don't have a job. I mean, I have a friend that works for, you know, a really well-known steakhouse, and they're done. I mean, they don't say that they're going to come back at all, and, you know, and I mean, there's countless ones, but you know, we're fortunate enough to be able to bring some of those guys on and really elevate our brand now. And so I mean, you know, that's the benefit. That's the, you know, it's a hard thing. It's sad to be, you know, I guess to be successful off someone else's downfall, but you know, it's really all about helping the community and being able to save, you know, some jobs. And
Do you think
I'm fortunate enough to do that?
I mean, there's a lot of people out there that have been using the delivery apps. I've always known about them for years. Sometimes if I was traveling, I would order stuff, but I never used them here at my house because it was one of those things I didn't want my kids to know that I could have Chick-fil-A dropped off on the front porch and a moment's notice. But I let the cat out of the bag. I'm paying for it now dearly every couple of days. Like, oh, and Taco Bell's on there? And it's like, yeah, so that is spiraling out of control. But anyway, do you think that those, like, are customers open to, like, maybe this kind of adjustment period? Because I totally agree with them. I mean, we were looking at the percentage that they take, and it's huge. I mean, it's like anywhere, it's a swing from like 25 to 40%. Yeah. I mean, what do you feel like that they're, and obviously this is your opinion, but I mean, do you think that they're going to maybe adjust at some point? Do you think that the customers, or do you think it's going to be on restaurants to find that cost somewhere that you can still,
it's very interesting. I think that it depends on what your model is, right? So with taking 25%, if you're just doing a ghost kitchen, that's really not that bad. Because you think about it, you don't have any of the front staff. You don't have
the same infrastructure,
all this crazy overhead.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Huge buildings, the AC and all the utilities. And so, you know, I think, and that's kind of where, because we jumped on doing Uber Eats probably four years ago, you know, kind of when it was first kind of getting its legs here. And that's what I said. It's, you know, these are customers that we probably weren't going to get anyway. We already are paying for the staff. We're already paying for the refrigeration, all of our utilities, the rent. You know, let's not add those costs into it. And it will make sense. Now, if your business is all that and you still have a brick and mortar and you're just doing delivery like that, it's not going to work. I mean, you're going to be you'll be in the negative.
So do you keep the prices the same for the delivery apps as you do like at the truck?
So we used to, but we've changed it recently.
Right.
Because we started to see, because we were getting hit so hard with primarily just delivery, that, you know, that little swing really wasn't matching up right. So that's kind of, we just recently increased them. It's not much, but it's just to cover that 25%. So, you know, we can still keep our lights on for everyone.
And you know, I've even seen, you know, like we're looking at like brisket prices and burger prices and stuff like that. And it's kind of crazy now, like just some of the prices. I mean, I'm seeing like major chains that are charging $24 a pound for brisket. And, you know, a year ago, that was like unheard of, unless you were like in the New York metro. But man, oh man, a lot has changed. I think if you have a craveable, delicious product, it's kind of like, I mean, look what people spend on an iPhone. If you have an amazing burger or you have an amazing whatever that may be, I mean, people, you do have unique pricing power. I mean, there's a tipping point there where customers don't want to be taken advantage of, obviously, but I think they get it that, you know, it's difficult. And I think that there is a little bit of wiggle room there, but yeah, man, oh man, that sure is a big, chunk for those delivery apps to take.
Yeah, it really is. And like you said, yeah, the sourcing of stuff has been relatively tough. I mean, we buy our meat locally. The problem is that plant got shut down due to COVID. So
really
scramble. So we buy it through a big supplier. Fortunately, they have other plants in other states, but they started sending us their burger that they make in that state, which is different than the burger that we get. So, you know, there was a little bit of explaining to customers, you know, that this is just a temporary, you know, item. It's still just as good, but it's, you know, they just form the patties differently. It's really the same meat. It's just, they form them where they're flatter. We have them where they're a little bit thicker. So,
those little details make a difference. You know, the ratio of like the bun to the meat and how the lettuce is cut. I mean, all those things, people don't really think it makes a big difference.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I think too, like the apprenticeship is attention to detail and like seeing those types of things. I think that was a huge thing that I never really realized before. You know, I knew how to make a plate pretty, but could I consistently repeat that, you know, and were all the ratios the right way? So
do you guys do only beef, or do you have plant-based? Do you do any turkey?
So we have plant-based now. We do the Beyond Burger. We originally were doing the Impossible Burger, but the original recipe had gluten in it. So we were kind of losing that customer out. Since then, they fixed that. So we've kind of looked at going back to them. But that was kind of our big push to use the Beyond Meat is that, you know, they were gluten free and plant based, and we could reach more people with that.
I had like my first Impossible Burger the other day, and you know, how the chefs are. You know, I'm like that too. It's like, we'll make our own and all this. Right. But I was like, I'm gonna try one, and we actually did. We put it on the menu. It's gonna be on our next menu next week, an Impossible Burger. And I gotta tell you, like, it was when we put it together and assembled it just like side by side, like the other burgers. And when you put all of the lettuce and all the fixings and everything on it, I was like, I looked at Joe. I was like, whoa, this is scary.
It's pretty groundbreaking. it's super scary.
I mean, it's not the same, but man, it is close. It is pretty close.
Yeah. We've used it here in Atlanta too. And yeah. You know, it was
For the Tyler Perry, right?
Yeah. We've used it multiple times. We've made chili with it.
Yeah.
So, oh, nice. Yeah, it's really crazy. I mean, because they're using like plant blood, right? So it's like you can actually cook it to temp. I mean, when I heard that, I'm like, I can't make it. There's no way I can make this. Right? Like, I don't have a lab. Like, so yeah, but you're right. I definitely thought at first, I'm like, I could figure out a way to make that, Dave. Because I mean, it's pretty expensive stuff. So
Tom, you talked also about is it a commissary kitchen? Have you reconsidered maybe the uses and applications for that now that it's like, hey, I mean, I don't know at what sequence when you launched it, you probably had certain intentions, but naturally now, I mean, you mentioned ghost kitchens. I mean, are you thinking about maybe kind of cross-pollinating that with other concepts or other models?
Totally. Yeah. So a big thing that we did, we actually started doing it a little bit before the pandemic, but and the idea of it was a shared kitchen space, right? So we rent to people that have, you know, something they want to make for a farmer's market or other food trucks or caterers, or, you know, we have an awesome company, Iconic Cocktails. They make cocktail mixes, but they're like incredibly gourmet. So there's, you know, lemongrass and lavender and, you know, just all these awesome flavors that you never really would think of to put in a cocktail. Yeah. So they can, you know, they have a good, clean, food safe place to be able to bottle those. And, you know, we have guys that make hummus and there's just all kinds of things. And what I love about it personally is I can walk around and just see all these different ideas and it just keeps me so motivated, you know, to be realized again, there's so much out there. There's so many different things you can do. It's just, you know, how much time do you have in a day? That's the,
right.
That's the only unfortunate thing.
Yeah. The focus part too, I mean, clearly you wouldn't be where you're at without having, focus on the product and growing it, because, you know, all these different things that it takes to grow a brand, focus is one of them. And I mean, I know, like for me, I mean, I do a lot of different things. I always have over the years, but I really try to be disciplined each day to say, even though there's these things I want to work on, this is what I have to work on today. And I feel like, especially now with the pandemic, that is going to be even more important, because, you know, you just can't go too far down the rabbit hole on an initiative that isn't going to have a return. And I feel like that's even more important in this kind of an environment than it was pre-COVID.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's such a good point. And my other business partner, Kyle, he started on doing sales. He's kind of moved now more into a, I guess, like director's role. So he's always coming up with ideas. I mean, this guy's crazy. He's got an idea every single day and they're great ideas. And my job is to kind of
tell him no
to those and, yeah, exactly. And see like, you know, this is how much time that's going to take. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a good balance for sure.
Well, he's probably kicking back now saying, see, Tom, I told you so. You know, right. It's like, you know, your high school buddy that, you know, he's now, right. You know, discovered your talent. And, you know, he's like, yeah, I saw this food truck thing, you know, since we were kids.
Right. Exactly, all you had to do is right? just I mean, agree I never to would have it. Thought of it. So. Yeah.
Tom, do you still keep in touch with some of the people from the Greenbrier and the CIA as well?
Yes. Yeah, I do. It's awesome to be able to have that network. There's so many days that there's certain things that I can't figure out, you know, and just to be able to call somebody and ask them a question about something or, you know, call on for like an old recipe. Hey, remember when we made this or made that, you know, how did you do that? And, you know, and then just the friendship, the camaraderie, especially from the Greenbrier, it was like, I mean, we were all in this dungeon together and it was, you know, we're all in it together, and not many people really understand that level of intensity that was like brought every single day. And yeah, it's cool to be able to reflect with those guys and see what they're up to. I mean, they're up to some amazing things, you know, in the industry, and it's it's cool to
well,
be
well, and that place that, I mean, you mentioned like curveballs. I mean, that place used to throw curveballs at you like on a daily basis. I mean, I remember one time being in the bunker. And I was down there, I was getting ready for some Boku store stuff. And I was like at the computer, I was like kind of wrapping up for the day. And it's like the lights flickered. I'm like, that's strange. The lights never flicker in the bunker. The bunker is always on.
Yeah,
the lights are always
power,
on.
Right? I mean, it's,
yeah, I was like, but what happened? So I didn't think anything of it. And then all of a sudden, like my phone starts lighting up and getting all these texts from people. I'm like, what the hell's going on? So I walk out the back tunnel. And as I'm kind of coming around, it revealed that like, holy hell, what just happened? And apparently a derecho, which I had never even heard of before, I think I'm pronouncing it right, but it's like this tornado that is like a wall of like a hurricane tornado, you know, several miles. And I don't know, were you there at the time when that happened?
I don't think I was there, because I remember seeing pictures of the devastation afterwards.
I mean, it was devastation. Like, I jumped in a golf cart, and I went down to, like, we were literally, like, 3 days away from doing the Greenbrier Classic, And mm-hmm. I mean, literally all these skyboxes were just wrecked. And I was just like, oh my God. And of course we had a whole bunch of people still staying at the hotel, and we had to figure out like, how are we going to feed everybody still? You know, power's out. There's like people, 1,000 people coming to breakfast in the morning.
Yeah, I mean,
oh God. Yeah. So you definitely, I do think you're battle tested, I would say.
Yeah,
coming out of an environment like that.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Those are some good times though. But, and they were always fun too, especially from, you know, the standpoint of getting everybody together as a team and having like one goal and one mind working as a crazy force. I mean, that was like, that was pretty moving.
You know, and you also, I mean, on top of having the Greenbrier experience, you also graduate from Culinary Institute of America, which is, you know, mm-hmm. the top culinary school. And Rachel has, in her family, has a history with culinary education, and in Michigan has like incredible, a lot of CMCs from there. Mm-hmm. What is education for culinary look like? And I mean, I can tell you right now, even just from our kids, I mean, just from us trying to deal with distance learning for our three children, that has like been the main topic in the household in the last couple of weeks. And we're kind of a little stressed out about it. But what about like culinary school? I mean, what do you think? What are you guys hearing? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting thing. It's something I haven't really thought too much about. And I mean, that's complete devastation for that industry as well. I think it's so important to be able to work with your hands and to do it firsthand. I think that's the hugest part of culinary education. And, you know, a lot of us chefs, that's how we learn, is by doing. It's not reading a textbook. I mean, you're not going to know how to make a pate en croute by watching, you know, how to do it. You got to do it.
Right.
And there's a lot of little tricks and things that you'll figure out along the way. And I think that's, going to be really hard. I think you know, hopefully this goes quickly and we can get past it.
And I think too, I think there's like a huge difference between watching somebody do something online and learning how to do something online virtually versus being in school, being present, having like Chef Rich said, the culinary school I went to, there was 5 certified master chefs as instructors. So being surrounded in that kind of environment and learning from those kind of people, it's totally different than virtual learning. And I think that's going to be, you know, I don't know. I fear for culinary school because I think that it really is, you know, huge, but I do see a future for virtual learning, but I think the hands-on in that environment, I think it does also give you that discipline that not all chefs have. I think you learn a lot of that in culinary school.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, having your toque on and it pressed the right way and your handkerchief.
Right.
Your whites are ironed and cleaned. I mean, there is a lot of discipline that goes into that. Your nails are clean and you're
right. They're lining
you. I mean, it's like,
lining you down the wall, checking your nails. Yeah, there's not going to be that virtual learning.
As soon as you said neckerchief, it kind of reminded me, even working back at the hotel, when we literally used to have neckerchiefs and starched chef hats, like, whoa. Yeah. I mean, it's like,
yeah, that was pretty cool.
Where the hell do you see that anymore? I mean, it actually would come in handy now to have the neckerchiefs, I guess.
That way. Right. A little mask or something.
I have a question that now, I mean, knowing that you have all those concepts, not talking about your food, but in general, which one is your favorite one? Like, what do you like to eat the most?
I would say the Oakwood Fire Pizza.
All right.
So it's pretty fun. You know, we get like the real Neapolitan 00 flour. We got a real wood fire oven. That's the only way we cook the pizza.
Wow.
You know, there's a lot of skill involved in, you know, maintaining that fire, keeping it at the right temp. And they're actually just like, they're backyard pizza ovens that we converted to fit onto a trailer that we could drive around. They'll fit into a backyard. We can fire like 6 10-inch pies at a time in there.
Wow.
Awesome. So it's a fairly good sized oven. And
that,
yeah.
That's inside of the food truck?
Yeah, we do have the food truck. So we actually have a truck of that version, and it's got pneumatic kind of like slides. So the oven slides outside of the oven or outside of the truck whenever we get to the event. So the smoke's not just pillowing inside the truck.
That's awesome.
And then we also have these like smaller carts that are just pizza oven bracketed onto like a little trailer bed.
That's awesome.
Are there any kind of apps out there where people can search for food trucks in their location?
Yeah, there is. There's one called Food Truck Finder, and it hasn't been widely used until recently. They actually just added in a feature where you can place your order online. It'll go directly to the food truck. We'll get your order, tell you when it's ready. You can come down, pick it up. So for apartment complexes, it's been extremely successful.
Wow.
You know, they can just order right from their home, but have a fresh meal cooked right outside their door. They just come down, pick it up. So, yeah, it's pretty exciting to get some of these more technology-driven things, you know, into our lives. And I think that's something we've seen a lot with the pandemic happening is, you know, I don't think I've ever used a Zoom before, but, you know, since the pandemic, I've used it quite a bit. And
right.
Yeah.
You know, I do think that the whole pandemic, it has actually like pushed us like 3 to 4 years, like into the future, like in 5 months, because a lot of these things like Zoom and all this stuff and the way that people work, I mean, that stuff was kind of coming, but I think that it just, you know, there's been all these industrial revolution, the information, all these different, you know, periods in time, the internet. But it's like we went through like warp speed over the course of like 5 months, like through all these things that people are doing things now that they probably would have eventually been doing, but still not for a couple more years.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, it is crazy. I mean, like you said, I mean, how many people totally are ordering on apps now, right?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, people that never, like my parents, they never would have done that. They could care less. They'd rather just, right. You know, go to their favorite little spot, pick up their food, or, you know, go dine in. And now they've got it. You know, I had to show them how to do it. And they use it a little too much now, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure when I get home, my kids will want to order Chick-fil-A or something. I mean, I wish you, are you planning on opening up? Are you planning on opening up in any other cities? I mean, I know it's probably not best time to be talking about growth, but.
Right. Well, so a big thing with our partnership with Kroger and Fry's is if we can meet the numbers, we can grow with them. It's an awesome opportunity. I mean,
wow.
they foot the bill on building out the restaurant into their store. And there's a lot of, you know, behind the scenes things that you have to do when you're at that, you know, that corporate level and that grocery store level. They have a lot of different rules than what a restaurant would have. But it's been awesome to work with them and kind of see that how that back end works. It's something I never thought in a million years we would be a part of. It's basically like a pilot program that they've launched, and you know, they're trying to get them. There's a couple like in their Cincinnati where their corporate office is. They've got a couple third parties is what we're called inside their grocery store. It's kind of where they do, you know, they might have fried chicken or pizza or sushi, all those different things inside the grocery store. So yeah, it's really exciting. And they're, you know, they have a big focus on local and fresh, and
that's great.
You know, their vision aligns with our vision. So, you know,
that's
hopefully
awesome.
We can ride with them for a little bit. So
awesome. Yeah, that's a great, great partner.
Very cool.
Well, I know we're coming up here on the hour. I'll let Chris and Rachel know if you have any final questions. I'll leave the final ones to you guys, so fire away.
Rachel?
I don't. I got all mine out throughout.
Awesome. So. I do have more questions, but I think that we're going to have to do a part two because there's a couple of like many more questions that I would have. I think that you are great, super humble for everything that you have done so far. I think that, I mean, everything that you have been talking is really for me, even that I'm working with Rich really closely, I think that the energy that you have, and I'm always saying to Rich the same, like the energy that Rich has for everything that they have a family and like they have to pay attention to so many things, and probably in your case is similar. Yeah. And that energy, you don't see that pretty often in many people. And in this time is really valuable, and that's really inspiring for me. I think it's great. Thank you very much for taking the time to doing the podcast with us. And hopefully we can do a part two, because I think that you're great.
Cool. Yeah, I really love that. I definitely enjoyed talking with you all, and it was great catching up with you, Chef. And
likewise.
Yeah, I'm honored to be a part of it and share some of the things that we've had to go through. So
absolutely. And just to point out and echo what Chris said, I mean, I think for a lot of people out there that are watching, your story really is, it's very inspiring, because I'd say the defining moment is you just deciding that you're going to go out and do something, and being okay with the fact that, hey, things may not go the way that you plan. It may not even work, but you've tried it, and look at what you've done. I mean, it's awesome. And, you know, really happy to kind of have known you and have been a part of your journey. And man, I think you still got tons and tons of runway. No, thank you.
Awesome. Oh, thank you, Chef. Awesome. I really do appreciate it. And anything for you. I mean, you really did. You gave me that, you saw me that one day, and you put all the trust in me to be a part of the apprenticeship program, and, invited me out there. And, my whole goal was to be a part of, the New York City kind of culinary scene. And, you showed me how much the Greenbrier had to offer and the things that you had to offer. And, you being a part of Bocuse, those were experiences that I'll never forget. And I take with me, and I try to implement a lot of the things that, I've seen you do, just like Chris was saying. I mean, the passion, the drive, the attention to detail that you have is incredible. And so we strive for. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. Tom, thank you so much. And we definitely are going to be putting, once this stuff gets behind us, putting a visit to come out and see you and have some burgers.
Awesome.
Don't count on us to be able to help out.
They're on me.
Right.
All right.
Awesome.
Cool, sounds man. Great. We can't really help too much. Can't really help too much with the whole mechanic part of it. I can help you cook if you need me to. But anyway, we'll sounds see you good. Soon. Stay safe. Thanks so much, Tom.
Cool. Thank you.
Appreciate you. Bye.